I guess, I don't know, I'll do an instruction. Unless you want to have a go, unless you want to have a go today.
No, you can go. You're good at it. You got lots of practice.
Lots of rubbish. Hello, welcome to the Easy Button, the podcast, which is now in, there's still the 14th episode, I think. But it's part A, B, C, D, I guess.
D. Yeah.
So part, under, toi, cat, catra. There we go, in the B, all continental and stuff. Your host tonight, James Prendergast, and
Taylor Boone. Hi, everybody.
Hello. So we're still continuing on with our top. Oh, can't speak today. We're still continuing on with our top couple of lists. We've done our favourite games and the ones that didn't quite make the top 10. And today we're going to do some of our most hated games, the ones we absolutely despise and we actually wish had never been made. Basically, you know, it's a waste of development funds. Could have been siphoned into something good. So, okay, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I mean, mine's easy. We've talked about it on a couple of podcasts.
Okay.
It's Master of Orion 3. And it's a horrible game, which is being more horrible because the first two games were so awesome.
But was it was done by a different studio, wasn't it? Was that what you're saying?
Yeah, a different designer. The people who did the first two Master of Orions had kind of moved on. So this was kind of an attempt to restart the brand, I guess, in some to some degree. This was released in, I think, 2000, somewhere right around there. And, you know, like a lot of the games that are on my list, it's 2003 was when it was released.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, rather late. Like a lot of the games that are on my list, it suffers because it was a sequel to some really great games that were not great in themselves. So, Boo 3 has a special place in my heart of hatred. Because as a game, you know, so one of the things I tried to put when I was putting together my most hated games was, okay, try to get past the sequel part, right? This isn't the first game.
Yeah.
Does a game really work on its own? If it didn't have the word Master of Orion 3 on the title, would this game be any good? Or even decent or weak, but not horrible? And the answer is no, it's a horrible game.
Okay.
You know, when it came out, it was a buggy mess, which is one really big strike against it. And we've seen a lot of games come out and be buggy messes.
And eventually, be successful as well, though.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can overcome that, can't you? If you love the game that much, or if it has certain qualities, you can overlook some of the big bugs.
Right, you can kind of work your way around. Civ 5 is kind of like that. I mean, some of the things that I consider buggy, you can kind of overlook to some degree, because other parts of the game are so good. But this game, you know, when it first came out, it was a buggy mess. And a lot of the bugs never really even got patched, never got even attempted to be addressed. So it was like, it came out, it didn't sell very well, if I remember correctly, and support for it just kind of went away. So any kind of germ of a good game that was in there somewhere, maybe hiding, was totally killed by lack of support. And then trying to go through the list of reasons why this game really sucks. It's got, the user interface is an abomination for games. The problem with the game, fundamentally, was they tried to model way too much, right? So they really wanted you to try to be the emperor, I guess.
And
all his minions. and so what ended up happening to the game is it, you had to do so much management, and the user interface had to support that complexity, right? So it became a very Byzantine labyrinth of drop-down menus and lists. And so it became much more, you know, people say Excel spreadsheet, right? When they talk about some, you know, forms of strategy games, it's really less like a spreadsheet. It was horrible. It was like being at work when you're trying to play a game. So that was a killer. But, you know, I played games that were not good, but not on my most hated list of games, that have been spreadsheet-esque, right? Like, I think it went through a phase where I was playing Aurora quite a bit, which is very much like a spreadsheet sort of game. So I can overlook some of that. But the AI was horrible. If I remember correctly, it would hardly ever do anything at all, even colonize other planets. And probably because there were so many systems in the game, that the AI had a hard time hooking all the pieces together to have any sort of success whatsoever, right?
It's like asking it to divide by zero or something.
Right. Well, it's, you know, in this state, AI in games is pretty, it's not real great, you know, as we've kind of mentioned on the podcast in the past.
Yeah.
But this game was so complicated that just the different gears that the AI would try to have to turn in order to build a ship and send it out to another, to colonize another world, were just probably, I'm imagining, right? I've never seen the code, or were just so complicated that no AI system, even probably today, would be able to work around all these Byzantine systems in any sort of systematic way in order to do anything at all. So that was very disappointing. And then, in a misguided design effort to try and make you feel like the Emperor and try to, you know, simulate the fact that you can only concentrate on certain things, you know, at a time, you only have so much time to concentrate on things. And this idea of, I don't remember what it's called, it's like Imperial points or something like that. So you can only do so many big things at once, right?
Okay.
Which kind of sounded cool in the lead up to the game, right? Because, yeah, in reality, you can't just go and click everything and have everything, you know, queued up and building and set up. But in practice, what it becomes is a very frustrating experience, because I know I need to do these three things, but I only have enough points to do two of them. And so the game becomes a lot less fun that way, because you have to wrestle with all this user interface to get the things that you want to do, and you can't do them. So that was kind of a failure in the design, in my mind.
Okay, so in comparison to, like, the first two, what was I going to say? Is the game kind of structured in the same way? Were you able to research one thing at a time that can move two, or was it multiple things that can move one?
I believe it was only one thing at a time.
Okay.
Which, you know, so they didn't really pick up on the successful part of the research of Master Round 1. They went with the only one thing at a time sort of thing, which, again, I don't like that design decision. I can overlook it, though, because it seems like almost every game does it. So I'm not going to ding it for that, but it was, that was disappointing. I mean, that was just kind of a light layer of scorn thrown on top of this game. The last thing that this game did badly, we've touched upon this point in a past podcast as well, is there were a lot of AI management. You could turn on some automation to help you manage this cumbersome beast of a, you know, an interface.
Yeah, kind of like you can do in certain other games as well.
Right. The problem with this is the AI, because the AI is fundamentally flawed, it would never do anything the way you wanted it to do. So you spend half your time going and undoing the AI's decisions it made on your behalf. And I'm sorry, if you can't trust your minions to do the right thing 90% of the time, why have it at all? So it was just an infuriating game. It just made me mad and pissed off whenever I played it. So I didn't play it very much, you know. But I played enough to know that I hate it. And, it's just, it's a rare game. And I don't, you know, like we've said before, we don't play very many bad games because life's too short for that kind of crap.
Yeah, yeah.
But so this is like, this is the worst game that I've ever played.
It's a combination of being a bad game and having been successor to good games.
Well, and part of it was I was so looking forward to it. And, you know, you read the preview, you know, this is probably the last game I got totally stoked prior to release. And this probably killed any pre-release hype I had left in me, which had already taken a beating over the years anyway. But it's just, I was so excited. I was so psyched for this game. You know, it's the third version of this game, this series that I love. I never really expected it to be as good as the first two, but it was more Master of Orion, which at the time, how could it be bad? And
a little did you know.
And then, you know, you start reading some of the previews, and then a little bit before release, you start hearing some kind of negative things about it. But, you know, you, as a fan of the series, you kind of push those off. And so,
it could just be, you know, it's not someone's cup of tea or whatever, couldn't it?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, people have, you know, different people have different opinions, and that's okay. So you kind of write that off as, you know, somebody didn't like something. And I remember, I took off from work. You know, I went and picked it up at lunch, at work. So, you know, took my lunch hour and went to the wherever I went at the time and picked it up and came back to work. And I didn't do any work the rest of the day because I was reading through the manual and looking at all the cool stuff. And I was getting really psyched to go home and installed it and start playing. I'm like, oh, this isn't really fun. And the more I played, the more not fun I was having. And, you know, sometimes you don't have fun when you first get a game because you don't understand it, right? But you kind of pick it up as you go and you start to say, okay, this is how this works and this is how this works. And it all starts to make sense. And that's a fun experience in and of itself. And it all kind of clicks. You know, that light of revelation that goes on, you're like, yeah, okay, now I get it. This is pretty cool. And that never, ever, ever, ever happened. I never really understood how all these systems were supposed to mesh together, except they were just a pain in the ass to deal with. And, you know, I went from such a high on this game to such a, what a stinking piece of garbage it is. And I tried to give it every shot I could because I really wanted this game to be, you know, what I wanted it to be, right? I really wanted Successor, it to be Master of Orion 3. And it wasn't.
What would you feel? You say Master of Orion 3 is currently, you know, your worst game ever.
Yeah.
What happens if they rebooted Master of Orion into a real-time RTS and changed it to a modern... the way they're doing with... what's it called? UFO?
XCOM, yeah.
XCOM.
It would depend. I mean, you know, I'm willing to give XCOM, you know, some benefit of the doubt. I'm leery of... I don't think it will be like XCOM because it's so different. No.
Yeah.
If they took Master of Orion and they made a Master of Orion 4 and they made it a real-time game, like Distant Worlds, and the game itself was good, I mean, you know, I would be excited. Obviously, I would be as excited as I was for Master of Orion 3, but, you know, I think they could do something like that and make it reboot the franchise and make it, you know, have some modern sensibilities and, you know, and make a really good game around it.
So here's an interesting twist, the last thought on Master of Orion. For each game, I just have an idea there. Each game, you should finish off our little segment saying which developer you would hand it to make it better or to, you know, to kind of continue on the goodness. So, like, if there's a developer out there, like, I don't know, maybe, the guys who did, Galsit, whatever, you know, who would you want to hand this series off to?
That's a really tough question. You know, I would probably give it to the guys who did Distant Worlds and give them a lot of money. The problems with that game are kind of production oriented, production value oriented. It's not that the game is horrible. It's that
the amounts of
resources
kind of thing they've had.
Yeah, they need a good UI designer, and they need somebody who can build a decent font, and you know, but I think that they've obviously played, you know, at least one of the Master Orions. I mean, you know, they at least are
not three.
not three. Maybe they did, but they learned what not to do there. But you know, it would be good to see them get a lot of money and try to reboot the franchise. That I think they understand what this Space 4X game is all about. And Distant Worlds is a successful real-time strategy game, I think, in this genre. So, yeah, I guess it would be those guys rather than, you know. Galsiv is I play a lot of Galsiv. It's not my favorite Space 4X game. I think it's a little bit soulless. I don't think that they know how to give it any character like the Master of Orion games do. You know, I don't know that the Distant Worlds guys do either, but I think I would rather say that their issues are more production value oriented than they are lack of trying.
And I think as well, to be fair, the Galsiv they've had their chance because Galsiv is essentially, you know, give or take a few features.
Yeah,
Master of Orion, isn't it? So yeah. They've kind of had their take on it already. So
yeah. All right, so Master of Orion, Master of Orion 3, don't play it. Ever.
I think you can say that about every game we've got on this.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true. So what do you got? What's your worst?
Okay, I think if we go on kind of adding in worst to disappointments, it's got to be UFO Afterlight and Everyone was after that.
Right.
So there was UFO Aftermath. That was in one of my top 10, wasn't it?
Right, yep.
I love that game a lot. But the two sequels, I don't know what they did. I don't know whether they got a different designer or lead designer or something, but they completely altered the game. Like, the first one was kind of like tactical, real-time, but plausible squad combat game. Right. And the sequels were more kind of like a resource management metagame come cartoony, but it's like one of these Marvel anime series. Like, you know, if you're a fan of, like the original Spider-Man, like Amazing Spider-Man or something.
Right.
And you go and see the anime Spider-Man, I don't know what it's called, Spider-Man 20XX or something. Or Ultimate Spider-Man or something. You're probably not gonna appreciate the other one, you know, if you're expecting the first.
Right.
Because it's a completely different style, a different character. And that's what they changed it into. And so, although the stories carry on, and they get progressively, the two sequels get progressively worse.
Right.
So the second one, it was like quite, the art style really changed, much more cartoony, much more bright. And they added in cyborgs and all those kind of like pseudo steampunk slash futuristic things going on. They also made it incredibly hard. It was, I would say, the game was probably harder than XCOM.
Really?
Not because the AI was harder, but because of the game mechanics. Because, you know, they were manageable. So what the game did was you were effectively mining things in each territory. You had like resources in each territory, and they weren't all the same. Like, maybe you had like crystal in one, you had metal in the other, and whatever, and technology, and you were recycling old technology from before the collapse of society in another one. But you had to build and maintain a rail system to be able to transport that back to your central base, so you could then use it to like research stuff and build stuff and things. And it was a big headache just doing that.
Really?
And then really early into the game, I mean, you've barely got, I don't know, 5 territories under your belt. And these super hard, badass people, alien things, come from outer space, they land on Earth, they start taking over territories. And they're not impossible to kill, but they're super hard.
Yeah.
And there's no way, I could not find any way of researching or powering through to get to a point where I could take these guys on. I would literally lose, one or two personnel. And also they limited how many people you could take with you on a mission as well. So I think it was only 4 or 5.
Really?
Compared to that, it was 6 or 7 in the original. So that made it a lot harder. The interesting thing, the only saving grace it had, was that it was like a kind of faction system. There was the humans who were from the original game, and there was the kind of mutants who had like psychic powers and stuff, but were quite weak, and then the cyborgs, which were really strong, but, you know, didn't have any psychic powers. But you couldn't choose to hire these people. They had to be offered to you by the other factions.
Yes.
You did good deeds. You got missions from these factions, and you did good deeds, or chose to ignore them and stuff. And you know, your reputation would increase, and they would offer you more people and better people. But your people died and got injured so much, you were effectively helpless. I didn't play more than 12 hours or so.
Okay, so there was no progression. I mean, you never really felt like you could, because, you know, in XCOM, you're relatively helpless until, you know, you start to research some later technologies, in which case you start to become, you know, there's like a kind of progression from, you know, oh my God, all my guys have potential to die, to, you know, now I'm a badass, and if I lose one guy in 4 or 5 missions, I'm not playing right.
Yes, yeah.
Did you ever feel that, like, there's a progression like that?
No. From what I played, the problem was that your resources were tied into the territories. So as you started to lose territories, your ability to make things and to research things decreased.
Right.
So you got weaker. It's a kind of feedback effect where you got weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker. And you guys took a long time to heal and stuff like that.
Oh man.
So it was like,
Games should not have a death spiral, right? Like that. I mean, that's not fun. When you start to lose, the game mechanic shouldn't be there to reinforce that spiral downwards. I mean, there should always be a way to come back or to right, you know, set it right or something like that, right? I mean, you just can't. I mean, that's no fun to be playing a game where you get to a certain point and then you have a setback and then there's no way to recover from it. That's not a good time.
And it was the worst part was you remember the rail system I was talking about?
Right.
That had to be powered, so you were expending resources to keep it on. Otherwise, you didn't get the resources to send back.
Wow.
So and the worst thing to add insult to injury, it also had Starforce.
Right.
DRM protection, which some people experience bad things with. I never had a problem with it. But,
right.
It's one of the first reasons why I stopped liking DRM. Well, not
right.
I didn't like it, I suppose. Yeah, but I mean, if I'm going to answer my own question that I asked before, like, who would I turn it, you know, give it to kind of make better or to influence the genre a little bit, because it's kind of become like the realm of indie games at the moment, isn't it? This kind of tactical squad mechanic thing.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I'd probably give it to the guys who made Full Spectrum Warrior. That's the one.
Never played that one either.
I played that one. Okay, so what Full Spectrum? I don't know if the studio is still around or whatever. It's quite an old game now. The original Full Spectrum Warrior was like a four-man tactical action game. So you were isometric view over your or over the head, and you had to control fire arcs and who moved and who covered and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's a bit like a non-first person Brothers in Arms.
Right.
Where you had tactical control over your squad and you had to use that to lay down covering fire and then work away behind enemies so you could attack them from behind their cover. And if you didn't do that, you'd die really quickly. So it was actually a really good game, but they had quite a few mechanics which were interesting that they could apply to this type of game. So yeah, that was something a little bit different.
You think Blizzard could do, at least with the real time part of this? You think they would have a shot at pulling something like this off? They have put out a few successful real time strategy.
Yeah, I was well. If you think about long big studios, it'd probably go more with Valve. Because what they did with Alien Storm, what is it, Alien Breed?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
That one recently.
Yeah, Alien Breed. Alien Swarm. Yeah.
Alien Swarm, that's the one, yeah. If they made that into just a click, point and click affair with pausing and stuff like that, that would be exactly what
you kind of out of this thing. Game? Yeah.
Okay. Perhaps a little less action-y.
Right.
But that would still be a welcome, even having it against like Aliens, kind of like an updated version of Space Hulk or something.
Right. Okay.
But not so hard.
Right.
So what's your next game?
My next game is one of the most famous awful games of all time.
Oh, okay.
Battlecruiser 3000 AD.
Oh,
it's an old game, but
just don't mention the developer's name because it might come and kill us.
Nasty. He can come try. Derek Smart. Hey, if I say it three times, he pops in front of me and takes a poop on my computer or something. This game was in development. So this game was it was an indie game before there really were a lot of indie developers, and it was designed and developed by for the most part this guy Derek Smart.
Yeah.
And if any of our listeners want to know anything about Derek Smart, just go to Google and type Derek Smart, and you'll find all about him. Not a pleasant individual on the internet, at least. Might be a nice guy in person, but boy. But this guy, this is sort of game that I've always wanted to play as well, right? I mean, you are in charge of a warship, a space warship, right? I mean,
yeah.
And you command it, and you decide you know, how to fight and what to do and stuff like that. The problem with this game really came down to, I think, two things. The first is the controls were the most horrible controls for this type of game that have ever been conceived by man. You couldn't do anything easily, right? There was no easy way to do anything on Battlecruiser 3000 AD. It was just this mess of, you know, hotkeys and, if I remember correctly, when it first came out, the mouse was basically useless. the main platform of the game is you're on the bridge of your battlecruiser and you have, if I remember correctly, you have crew stations manned by crew. And you could, by selecting different keys on the keyboard, give them different orders to do different things. And the whole idea was this kind of hardcore simulation of space warfare.
Yes, yeah.
And there are a lot of cool sounding things in the game where, you know, every crew member was simulated. So, you had the guys down in the engine room, they were real, you know, at least within the confines of the simulation, real guys, and they would have shifts and, you know, so you could have a case where the battlecruiser is floating around, going wherever it's going, and most of the guys are in their quarters or eating or in transit or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, the problem was he made it too much like a Starship simulator in the sense that you need to go to Starfleet Academy for 4 years to learn how to fly one of the damn things. There was way too much minutia and detail and in order for it to be any fun. So you get this game, you bring it up, and it's just a pain in the ass to try to fly around and do anything in the damn game, which is why you bought the game in the first place. The other problem, in my mind, right, this other people may not have this problem, but I did, was you're ostensibly, you know, a commander in this, I can't remember what the armed service was called, but you're kind of a commander in this thing. But the thing is it didn't matter. You could just go do whatever the hell you wanted to. So there are no orders or...
It's kind of like Elite crossed with Submarine Commando, isn't it?
Yeah, except for Elite, you're a traitor, and you're supposed to go around and do whatever you want to do. If you're in a military organization, you say, well, I don't want to go fight the war that's happening over here. I want to go back over here and just fly around and do stuff. That's okay in this game, but, you know...
You'd be court-martialed in real life and then...
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it makes no sense whatsoever. It was just, for me, that was kind of a killer, especially at the time, because I wanted a game... I don't know if this is an old game, but there's this old game called basically what the game was, it was called, it's not Starfleet Command. Okay, basically, have you ever played like VGA Track or any one of those sorts of games?
Oh yes, yeah, I love that.
So this game was kind of a ripoff of that, except they put in this whole rank system and you got awards and medals for doing well and stuff like that. And it was really cool because it kind of felt, you know, again, this is on the Commodore 64, so it was early 80s, but it kind of felt like, you know, you had progression and you were kind of part of, you know, other things going on, even though nothing else was going on, right? But you kind of just had this kind of, in your mind, you could kind of say, yeah, I'm the captain of the ship and I'm going around and, hey, I did really well and I got a medal out of it. Hey, really cool. That was kind of cool at the time. I wanted something that felt like I wanted this, you know, a simulation of running a starship, but I wanted a simulation of a command structure that said, hey, battlecruiser dude, go here and fight these guys. And, you know, and however you did there would affect that sector and you'd get different orders. And so that's what I really wanted. I wanted something like the simulated battles of something like Falcon or, something like that, where, you know, based on what you were doing in the game, it had effect on the game world, and, you weren't like the god of the game. We talk about agency and how sometimes worlds feel like they exist and you just are in them, and sometimes worlds feel like they exist just for you to be in them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This game felt like it just was generated just for you to be in and fly this complicated spaceship around. And it was just, and then it was buggy as hell, which didn't help, and the support was kind of bad, and, it was just a horrible, horrible mess. It's just a horrible mess of a game. It's just,
So, like, it just failed in every single level. And from what I remember, that he got a lot of flack from it, didn't he? And that kind of set him off his handle.
Yeah.
I don't know if people... Because the studio is still going, and he's got, he has his fans and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that would kind of turn you off any other games they release.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't played anything else that he's put out. I mean, I don't want to. He might be making great games, and I have no interest in them. I just feel so burned by this game. He was always kind of a smart aleck personality. I mean, because this game was in production for so long, and he was saying how awesome it was going to be for so long. And every time anybody said, hey, when's it going to come out? And he would get all defensive and rant on internet boards. But once it came out and it was a piece of crap and people called him on it, I mean, he really went to the next level of internet insanity, which, again, that's not part of the game. It doesn't matter. It shouldn't matter, but it kind of does. Because peripherally, you're just like, this guy's a jerk.
Yeah.
And his game sucks. I don't want to play anything that he puts out.
It makes a difference, though, because you want to complain about the game, and if all you're getting for that is grief, rather than, yeah, okay, guys, I'm sorry, you shipped the game, and really, it's not that great,
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of the opposite of what Stardock did with Elemental. Elemental came out, and they said, oh, yeah, it shouldn't have gone out like that, and we're going to do everything we can to make it right.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate the game went out like that, but I have confidence that they're going to make it right because they at least said all the right things. Whether they deliver on them or not, that remains to be seen. But
yeah.
You feel confident in it. When the game comes out and it's a steaming pile and they're like, no, you just don't know how to play because you're stupid or crap like that. It's like, no, you know what? I am stupid because I gave you $50 of my hard-earned money. Yeah, I am stupid. But I won't be stupid twice, so piss off.
So who would you give this type of game to try and, to make it right or to make a new version?
Oh, that's a hard question. They don't exist anymore. I'm going to give them to a non-existent studio. But the guys who did Starfleet Command, which was a computerized remake of a board game called Starfleet Command.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. They made three games. The second one's probably the best. First one was pretty cool. The third one was not as good. I would give it to those guys because they really seemed to get it when they had the time, the time and the money and the resources to make these sorts of space flight simulator games.
Yeah.
If you think about it, there really haven't been a small number of games that simulate capital ships, right?
You're always a fighter, aren't you?
Yeah, you're always a fighter.
Trading missile.
Yeah, you're never a big, ponderous spaceship. And I think those guys did it about as good as it's been done. I can't think of anybody else really who's come close to pulling off that kind of ponderous capital ship sort of feel. Now, I'd like for what they did is make it even more simmy than Starfleet Command was, because they really kind of dumbed down the Starfleet battles. Rule, Starfleet Battles, that's what it's called. And they kind of dumbed down the rules a bit to make it in the game, and I would want more of a sim, maybe a cross between those guys and the guys who did, do the submarine simulations. That would probably be the best realization possible of the sort of game.
Okay, cool. So my next game is a game called Microcosm. And I think it was released by Psygnosis back in the old days.
That sounds so familiar.
It's basically your worst nightmare. So you imagine yourself as a kid, you pick up a box in a shop or a crucifer or something, you look at the back and the screenshots look great.
Yep.
And you're reading through and it's talking about this thing you're going through that you're going to be miniaturized. Like, what was that film with the guy's in the capsule and gets miniaturized and put into someone inner space.
Okay.
And that wasn't that long before this game came out. So the kind of the concept of someone being in a capsule, being shrunk down and being put into someone's body in the bloodstream is, was already there. It was in my mind at the time. And this game is saying, you know, you're going to be shrunk down, and you go into someone's body to fight off this infection that's killing this person. And so I picked the game, put it in, started. It was a rail shooter.
Really?
So imagine something like Raptor or Asteroid or something. And I thought, you know, you could not even control, like, sideways movements. So it was really? Just going through this, through these arteries and stuff like that. And you were just sitting there, and you were pressing fire when you needed to. And then the level was done. And I think I played two levels and stopped and exited the game. It was just one of the most biggest letdowns ever. It was just, okay, the packaging didn't technically lie, and the screenshots were exactly as what they were. But you had no agency, you had no control in this game. It was barely a game. It was like the Peggle of games.
Oh, don't be bad mouthing Peggle now. Come on now.
Okay. Maybe not Peggle, maybe Farmville. So the game, is that okay to the game du jour?
You can diss on Farmville all you want to.
It was worse than Farmville. At least Farmville had you could choose to do things in Farmville.
It looked pretty.
That's the thing. It looked pretty. In Raptor and all these other kind of shoot 'em ups, you have to fight waves of things, and there was that kind of principle. Except you didn't have as much control as you do in those games. You couldn't fly around properly and stuff. And it was boring. It was stupid. It just wasn't any fun at all. It was really, really bad. So that's really the reason why it made my top five, because I hated it with a passion. for wasting, it was my own money as well. It was one of the few games I bought when I was really young with my own money.
Right.
So it stayed with me all these years. And I guess, if it doesn't really need to be made, because there are quite a few indie shops that do these types of games, you know what I mean?
Right.
And there's even been, I think, one or two being released in the Winter of Discontent indie pack on Xbox Live at the moment. I would buy that. But, yeah, I mean, pretty much any indie person could do it better. Maybe I'd give it to the Ikaruga guys to see if they could do something interesting with like antibodies and stuff like that. Maybe that's a morphy ship to not be accepted by, you know, the antibodies and stuff. Because, you know, I don't know if you know how antibodies tend to work, but certain types attach on a certain way to certain parts of invading virus and viri and bacteria and stuff. If you have a different shape, that antibody no longer works, and it works for specific, you know, viruses and bacteria and stuff. So you have to make new ones. So that could be like an interesting mechanic or something like that.
Right.
Either having to alter your ship as well as fighting things off and things. But maybe give to them.
Okay. That seems fair enough.
Yeah, no, just not very much to talk about, really, because to be honest with you, there's not much in the game to talk about. It was just, it was bad.
Pure rail shooter.
So what's your next game?
My next game is Privateer 2.
Okay, I never ever played this game. I had a friend who had it. I play it, unfortunately.
Now, this is a game, as a game, was not horrible.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mediocre at best flight, you know, space flight simulator sort of kind of. Very light on the simulator part.
Okay.
But two things struck out in my mind. Number one, and again, I tried to not do this, but I couldn't help myself on this game. Number one, it's not Privateer. They shouldn't have put the damn name on the box.
Oh, really? How is it different? How is it different?
Well, think of all the cool things about Privateer.
Like exploration.
Exploration, trading.
Upgrading ships and stuff.
Yeah, really open world. Erase all of those fun things, and there you have Privateer.
Oh my god. Two.
Privateer, you wake up in a hospital, you have amnesia, you don't know anything. You have a ship, and you start getting missions to work you through the storyline. And kind of antithetical to Privateer, where there's a plot that you may never experience.
Mm-hmm.
This is beating you over the head constantly with the plot. You cannot get out of the plot. You can't really deviate from the plot and go do anything else.
It sounds a little bit like a Freelancer, which was the kind of spiritual successor to Privateer.
Right, but as Freelancer, you didn't have to go down the plot. You could always take a side quest.
A
side mission and do a side mission here and there.
That's true.
Give you some extra money or experience or whatever. But this, from what I recall, you couldn't do any of that. It was just basically you going and advancing the plot constantly.
So it was the FPS of space flight sims.
Yes, very much so. Very much so. And the plot was horrible. I didn't ever finish the game. I probably got 7 or 8 or maybe 10 hours in and gave up. I started up, I was very disappointed because I'm like, what in the hell is all this stuff? And I'm like, okay, all right, so they're trying to put a little bit more plot in here. At some point, they're going to let you off of the rails and let you go do what Privateer lets you do, which is go roam around space and shoot pirates and make money and upgrade your ship and do stuff. And you could upgrade your ship to some degree, but they took a lot of the variety out of the original game, and you could, you know, upgrade. You know, you had guns, and you could upgrade them to different guns. And that's about it. Or you could buy a new ship, but there's only like 3 or 4 different kinds. And so you really didn't have this experience of being in this universe and exploring it and finding out about it and doing interesting things in it. It was just everything was pretty much in service of the plot.
Yeah.
And that just pissed me off, to be honest with you, because it had almost no relationship to the original game. And I do feel like I kind of bought it under false pretenses. They should have just kept that front name off of it, and I might have picked it up anyway and been, meh about it instead of making one of my worst games of all time. You know, the combat was a lot more arcadey.
Oh, okay.
It was just every aspect that made Privateer such a good game, they messed with and made worse in every possible way. And so it's not like the game itself is a terrible game. Mm-hmm. It's just it's so far from being a great game, number one.
Mm-hmm.
And then number two, it's so far from what made Privateer such a great game that I, you know, I'm making an exception on this one from my, hey, you know, try not to worry about the sequels so much and try to judge the game on its own merits. You know, I can't divorce myself from this in this case. But, yeah, it's just still hate it. You know, it kind of came in the mid to late 90s.
Did it have full motion video as well?
It had cheesy ass full motion
video. Oh, man.
It was just, and even at the time it was cheesy. Because back then, full motion video didn't have the stigma that it does now. You know, back then there were actually games where you had full motion video and you thought were pretty cool, right? Like Wing Commander 3 and 4.
Yeah.
I thought had pretty cool full motion video.
Or even Command & Conquer, the first one, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, the full motion video in those games, it was pretty cool. This was just like the cheesy-assest garbage that you've ever seen. It was just, ugh. It was just, you know, they're trying to be all profound and deep and it just came off comical.
They got some kind of grade school writer to tend the story.
It's what it seemed like, you know. It seemed like, you know, something that would come out of my fifth grader, you know, my fifth grade kid's creative writing class or something. I mean, it was just terrible.
Yeah.
And so that puts you off too. And then, you know, when you fly, when things just never opened up and let you go do what you want to do, it's like, this is not a Privateer game, sorry. You know, it wasn't even set in the same universe. You know, so there's not the...
What?
Karathi and...
Oh, my God.
What? Yeah, it's, you know...
That was the coolest thing about the game, because you could run into the different factions fighting each other and stuff like that.
Right, exactly. And
you knew who they were from the other games?
Right, you knew who they were from the Wing Commander games. Exactly. And it's just... Bleh. And, you know, to answer your question... I don't know who could make this game a good game.
I was going to say, you know, I had a thought while you were talking, who I might pick. Is it Peter Molyneux on Lionhead? I know it sounds crazy.
No, I can see that. I mean, what it seemed like they attempted to do with this game was take the anonymity of the Privateer universe, because you don't really have any character development in there. You don't really, and try to make it more of a personalized story. I could see Peter Molyneux kind of pick it up on that and, maybe make it something interesting out of it.
Mm.
But it would have to do the space stuff, right? I mean, you have to really have a really open world, more so than his last
couple of
decades
games.
Worth of games have been, yeah. Right?
Well, I mean, like, he's done everything from Dungeon Keeper to Populous to Fable. Yeah. So he's got quite a big range there. I mean, I suppose the other way you could go is it Warren Spector? Did he do Spore? Or was it someone else?
Who did Spore? It wasn't Warren Spector. Jeez, I can't think of that guy's name. That's how wonderful Spore was.
I didn't make my top five list, but I didn't actually play it, so. Will Wright it was.
Will Wright, there you go. Yeah, I don't think he would do a good job with this. He likes cartoons too much for this to be, because Privateer's a gritty, dirty, Warren Spector would probably do a better job of it than Will Wright would.
Did he do Deus Ex?
Was Warren Spector?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
Okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, he could do that universe then, yeah.
Yeah, he could do gritty. I think you have to have Privateers, you've got to be kind of a scumbag. And the grittier parts of the original Star Wars movie, right?
I mean, yeah.
Well, you have lots of that in there.
Just basically Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah, a lot of that. A lot of the, just...
The cool part of Star Wars.
A lot of scumbags shooting, spaceships shooting each other.
Yeah, and good guys shooting first.
Yeah, well, of course. Because are they good?
So,
it's bumming me out just thinking about this game. So, I'll go on to your next game.
Okay, so my next game. Actually, I'm going to throw this one out there. I know it won't be very popular. And it's not really the next game in the list, but I want to make sure we get through it. It was Left 4 Dead 2.
Oh, come on.
And
all right, I want to give you your shot.
This is purely because it is so different from the first game. And it's exactly the same reason why you dislike Pirate 2.
Right.
It's... The first game is kind of like an arcadey fun romp you go through and stuff. Left 4 Dead 2 is unrelenting. It's the characters aren't as likable.
Right, I'll go there.
I can't like the characters. I don't think there's a. I think possibly only the girl's the only one I like, and she screams a little too much. I'm not liking.
Well, they don't. I think the problem with the two is there's not as much. None of the characters have as much personality as any one of the first survivors in the first game. Yeah. I agree with that.
And then on top of that, the mechanics of the game are so drastically different. It changes the way you play. It's much more hardcore. So when you get hit, you slow down so much. You know what I mean? If you get tagged slightly by a zombie, you're then basically zombie fodder because they're all on you. And there's one level specifically that I hate is the carnival one. And I tried, because I played through all the Left 4 Dead, not levels, campaigns on my own. With the AI first to kind of learn what was going on,
right?
In the original Left 4 Dead, and that was completely possible. You could play through even up to mid to high hardness on Left 4 Dead 2. I could not complete the campaigns past the first one on even the easiest setting with the AI.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
and that put me off a little bit because it meant I couldn't practice the maps on my own before getting into, and learning. Because much more in Left 4 Dead 2 than in Left 4 Dead 1, you have to know the maps and know what you're doing. Because if you hesitate, you get stuck in dead. There's much more of a rush in Left 4 Dead 2 than there was in Left 4 Dead. Because of the way they kind of... in fact, that was actually one of the stated aims, was to make people move. It was to keep people moving rather than hunkering down and withering the storm, so to speak.
Right.
And I think that kind of pushed it into an area where the game was so fundamentally different, it wasn't what I enjoyed anymore.
Okay.
And it's not that I enjoyed hunkering down and weathering the storm, although I do find that fun. I mean, I enjoy onslaught modes and stuff like that, even like in the original Alien versus Predator and thing, I like that kind of challenge.
Yeah.
But the levels as well, the the levels they chose, it was very easy to... I don't know whether they changed the way they did hit detection and stuff or whatever, but it was so much more easy to get stuck on scenery. It was much more... In Left 4 Dead 1, because the way the Half-Life engine works, the Source engine, that the environments were very were less cluttered, because if you got stuck on things, you would basically be stuck. In Left 4 Dead 2, they really pour all that detail in there. It makes a much more enjoyable kind of view of the level, but you also get stuck a lot more easily. So you're running down in between benches and you get clipped by one. You don't slide past it as you would do in real life. You just stop dead until you kind of angle yourself around and move on.
Mm-hmm.
And that also made that much less fun for me as well. I think even just adding in something like a stumbling mechanic would have been really cool. Yeah, it might have changed my enjoyment of it. So if you knock yourself against something very, very slightly, if you're within a certain limit of the edge of the hitbox or something, maybe you lose control of the left and right of direction of your character for a moment, like 2 seconds or something, and you go forward at half speed, or go forward at double the speed, but you fall over or something.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't do that, so it was just kind of, yeah, the levels were less fun for me to play, because you look battling the environments as well as the enemy. So yeah. that kind of, it's just, yeah, it's just a really big disappointment. Especially on top of that, it was the released after the year thing. You know, it was just 1 year after the release of the first one. They hadn't done any kind of DLC or additional content in the first one up to that point. And it really felt like, you know, they'd focused on this game rather than, you know, kind of trying to nurse the other game, which like they do with all the other franchises.
Yeah.
So that kind of added the final bit of insult to that. And I guess, I mean, I know you probably won't feel the same. I know many people won't feel the same about this game.
Yeah. But it was... Keep it quiet, because I don't want to tell you why you're wrong, but...
Well, I mean, just different people enjoy different things, don't they?
That's exactly right. I mean, I like both of them. I think they are quite different games. The first one is a lot simpler.
Yes.
And the second one has a lot more complexity, but I think I like the added complexity of the game. I think it makes it more challenging.
Mm.
I like the fact that it does force you to keep moving, and I also like all of the maps. I think they're all, you know, visually striking and interesting, and have a lot of interesting mechanics to them.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that part. I just didn't like experiencing the mechanics around those features.
You know, and I think, you know, like, you know, the zombie stickiness, while it does irritate me when I'm playing, I think part of the point of it is to make it irritating to you while you're playing. And, you know, the fact that they grab onto you easier means that you have to really make sure you're watching what you're doing and know where all the commons are so you can't get stuck and mobbed. So it makes it, to my mind, the second game is a lot more tense, and the tension is unrelenting, and the kind of, the release of that tension when you finally make a safe room is a lot more intensive and gratifying than in the first game. You know, the first game, I guess you could say you play to a large degree to kind of experience the maps, and weirdly in the second way you kind of play it to experience this tension release cycle throughout a given map, which is kind of weird because, you know, the first game is a lot more simplistic looking. The maps are not as interesting. There's not as much detail to them. But most of them end up becoming really corridor crawlers in a way. But, I can kind of understand the points that you make, even if I don't agree with them necessarily. But it is a drastically different game from 1 to 2. And to kind of go to your point about, you know, the only 1 year between the first one and the second one, I think they were trying to take one and make it, put all the stuff that they were going to put into two into one, and
there's no way they could do that. Yeah,
they just couldn't do it. They would have, so they had to end up making a sequel instead of a whole new game. I don't know. You know,
it just meant the original game kind of became a bit of a ghost town. Like, so it's like when you play TF2 and a new class gets updated, everyone plays that class.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, and there are still some people who play Left 4 Dead 1. I play Left 4 Dead 1 quite a bit because I like, it's a lot more frenetic and, you know, it's, you know, it's a more, it's less complicated. It's more, I don't want to say soothing, but it's more, you don't have to be, there's less tension, so you don't have to be on guard all the time. You can play it more casually, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. Whereas the second one is, you know, I'll be honest with you, at the end of a, at the end of a map, at the end of a campaign, I will be tired. because I've had this tension, unrelenting tension the whole entire game. And when you get to the end, you're just like, man, I am beat. You know, people are like, another game? Like, not for me, man. I'm beat.
I'd say one good thing about Left 4 Dead 2, the versus mode in it is much.
Yes. Yeah. 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 I never play versus mode anymore in Left 4 Dead.
No, there's no real point. The game isn't balanced at all for the infected.
I mean, you know, the good thing about the new infected in Left 4 Dead 2 is you have more variety, when you're playing the infected, and there's more strategy involved when you're on the infected side.
The maps are designed for both, you know, for both teams.
Right. Yeah. They're a little bit better designed. Yeah. So, okay.
So what's your, I was going to say, there's not much point to me saying another developer, because I think the developer is Valve.
You know? Yeah. They're the only ones who keep it. It'll be interesting to see what they do with that franchise going forward. They have made some interesting calls on that, up until now, and, you know.
Yeah. So what's your next game?
All right, so my last game is probably my most disappointing game. And it's Knights of the Old Republic 2.
Ah, okay.
And this game is a great game for the first three quarters of it, I guess. I mean, it really takes a lot of the things I liked about the first game and really makes them more intense.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I played. I played KOTOR every so often, but the last quarter of that game made me so angry that I haven't picked it up since I played through it the first time. So I'm speaking from quite a bit of memory here, so I maybe have some incorrect statements here. There's my disclaimer. But, you know, the first three quarters of that game are really good games. They really take, you know, a lot of the interesting and cool parts from the first Knights of the Old Republic game and add to them in such a way that those parts become, you know, better, right? I mean, it's a really great game, and
I wish I could agree with you, because but I couldn't.
You didn't like it?
No, I didn't have a choice. The game would not stop crashing.
Oh yeah, it was really buggy. It was an Obsidian game, right? So of course it's buggy.
It was just I couldn't play more than I think an hour and a half.
That's horrible. Yeah, it had a lot of bugs, but some of the powers you get are pretty cool, and the lightsaber combat is more refined than in the first KOTOR.
Okay.
You know, and the story is a lot more interesting. The problem is it doesn't end so much as it kind of peters out.
Yeah. I was going to say, have you played the fan patch?
No, I have not. Like I said, I haven't picked it up since I put it down at the very end.
Because there was some talk about it recently, the last couple of months, where they've released the kind of pre-final version of what they're doing, and it basically fixes the whole game and adds in all the stuff they had originally in the game, but didn't have enough budget or time or whatever to put in properly. So they've basically finished the game for Obsidian.
Well, that's awful nice of them.
Oh yeah, but.
So, like I say, I had a really good time with this game until all of a sudden it just
stopped.
Yeah, it stopped. It just stopped having stuff stopped making sense. The plot stopped being. There was no closure to anything, right? I guess it's probably it just is horrible, right? I mean, that they would take this game and put all of this
effort into it.
Yeah, that
because they do love their games, don't they? Obsidian always they craft great worlds and great characters.
Right. But it just, that game is on my list because the ending is just bad. It's, you don't really know what, you go to the end of the game, and it's like, what the hell happened?
Is it kind of like, because there's some games you they're actually, you know, they're meant to be like that, and they kind of, they're expecting a sequel. So think games like Too Human and stuff like that, the game just ends on a cliffhanger. as if it was expected that the game will continue on soonish. Which I think is pretty stupid for a game, especially when you have 3 to 4 years development time anyway. I don't like that kind of storytelling mechanic.
Not unless the first one was written with like a 3-part story arc, like Mass Effect or something like that, right?
Oh, but at least that even finished, you know what I mean? That had its own story.
Games have to have some sort of resolution, even though they may not resolve the larger arc. The minor arc inside the game has to end. And this one never felt like it really did. I just came away from that game just totally unfulfilled, right? I mean, it's like they just said, hey, we need to put this thing out, and we don't have time to finish this game, so we're going to just put it out anyway. And that's really what it felt like, and that explains the bugs as well. But it just boggles my mind that a game, and I can't remember when this came out.
Can't have been more than 2005.
2005?
Okay. I was just saying, can't have been later than that, I don't think.
Right. So somewhere around there. It's just hard to believe that a game developed in that era would not have...
It came out 2004 and 2005. 2004 North America, 2005 in New York.
It's hard to believe that a game like that would come out and not have an ending. I mean, it's just like
it's an RPG as well.
It is an RPG, yeah.
It's like the story is the main reason to be playing, really.
Right. Yes. This game makes my top list bad list because of that. It's just I want to finish this game. I want to know what happened at the end. I want to know why are these people the way they are? Why are these characters that I've heard about and interacted with for 25, 30 plus hours?
Yeah.
You want some kind of closure, some ending, and this just totally doesn't have any of that. And so it's too bad because it could have been a top game if the ending had been satisfying. Instead, it's a crap game because of that, right? And the part of it is until you read on the internet how it really goes down, you don't know that. And you play through it, you just get to this ending, and it's just, it's like, what the hell? I mean, it's me? Am I wrong? Yeah, it's just bad.
Yeah, I definitely see you can pick up that. It's a really big patch as well. It's not like some kind of small thing. You're talking like, good few hundred meg, maybe a gig or so.
Really?
Because they actually created some content and they used the stuff that was partially finished and stuff to actually finish the game. So you may want to pick it up at some point and see if you can actually finish the game. Play it through to...
That shit may have sailed, but yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'll pick this up cheap somewhere and apply the patch and finish it up.
Is there anyone you would
want? I think BioWare should have done this. BioWare does not do this to games. BioWare, sometimes they have games that come out that are buggy, but not a buggy mess. I can't think of a BioWare game that came out that was just a horrible, buggy mess for a lot of people.
No,
And then, the thing about BioWare is they know how to tell a story. They know how to finish a damn story.
Yeah.
And so I think that I wish BioWare had made this and not passed it along to Obsidian. So it'd be nice if they made a KOTOR 3, and made it. Problem is, KOTOR 2 kind of ends and you don't know where you go from there.
Well, I think KOTOR 3 is the MMO, isn't it, really?
Yeah, probably. Which I'm more interested in because it's
MMO. Yeah, and it's probably going to suck as well.
Yeah, it may be great, but
this is, just seems that whatever they do with the Star Wars universe, it only gets worse and worse.
Especially when you start trying to put in crap from the prequels.
The what now?
Yeah, very funny. I see what you do.
Okay, so my last game, Black Site Area 51. And this is a game that was kind of trumpeted by the developer, as these games often are, the terrible games. As being insightful commentary on the war in Iraq and the kind of the war on terror and stuff like that. It was meant to have these kind of undertones.
So it has meaning. It's meaning in the real world.
Yes, yeah. It was kind of reflective of certain undertones within society itself and what how the governments interacted with those with the societies that they were supposed to protect. And first off, the game is pretty buggy, so things wouldn't happen. You have to reload the entire play from the level from scratch and stuff like that.
Okay. So what was the game like? What kind of game?
It was a first person shooter.
Okay.
And it was pretty bog standard. It was set after Halo, so you had the two weapon limit and stuff like that, which you could switch out. You had regenerating health, and the game was quite budget. It was cheap in the way it was animated. Cheap in the graphics were quite nice. It was in the Unreal Engine, and the storyline was complete tosh, really.
Yeah.
And the characters were rubbish. And the so-called, you know, the subtle and clever commentary on the wars and governments and stuff like that is nonsense. It was about as subtle as a pair of breasts on the page 3 of some cheap tabloid. You know, it was like you'd be going along in the level. And then one of you guys would be something there, like, I don't know, a UFO or something. Because you were around Area 51, so it was like kind of memorabilia and stuff like that around there. Or there'd be like a dead soldier. And the guy would turn to you and go, well, this is what our government does and this is why it's bad and, you know, things like this. And it was just literally, just basically quote saying, this is why it's bad and this is what, you know. And it wasn't even like a, you know, well, I'm going to go home in a body bag soon by the looks of it or something. It was, you know, these people died for no reason. And
oh, that's horrible.
It was terrible. And yeah, it was pretty buggy. I had a difficult time getting through it on one of my computers. I had to switch to a different one. It played okay on that one. I hated it. The controls were funny. They put in this kind of motion blur. I don't know why. So when you moved your mouse around, the kind of screen blurred a little bit. But it also seemed to introduce some kind of lag. So you ended up, you'd moved too far from where you were going originally with the mouse, with your pointer, with your crosshairs. So you'd often miss what you were aiming at a little bit before you moved it back to where it was supposed to be. So it was as if it had like mouse acceleration on all the time. You couldn't turn it off.
Oh.
It was really weird, yeah. And the blurring didn't help with you moving around and stuff.
Right.
It was just.
Did you finish it?
Yeah, I struggled through it in the end. I think I even wrote something on the blog about how I didn't like it. But it's just one of those games where you think, oh please, you know, give it another month or something, rebalance it a little bit, just. Change your UI a little bit. You know, change your the way the player plays with the game. Just,
I mean, could it have been good?
Or
was it just so far away that it was no way as really good?
Could have been average. Could have been slightly higher than average. But the game itself, it was I want to say worthless. The gaming scene.
Why'd you finish it?
Because it's just one of those things. I just said to myself, I have to finish this game. You know, I got through so far, and then it was crashing all the time. The bit I was at, it wouldn't load the level transition. So I switched to my new PC and played through from scratch. And I just thought, I have to finish it no matter what.
I hate when I get like that.
Yeah, I'm a bit obstinate.
These days, if you look at our games, I mean, there are a couple of pretty stinky games on there, but I just, if a game is just not doing it, like, here's a good example. This is not a bad game. This is not on my list, but it's Battlefield Bad Company 2.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't care for it, so guess what? I'm not going to finish it. I don't care anything about it.
Yeah.
The single player game is laughable, and I got about 2 or 3 hours in, and I was like, yeah, this is crap. I can go play something fun.
Did you play the first one? Because I really loved the story in the first one.
Bad Company? The original Bad Company?
Yeah, yeah.
No, I didn't play that.
Okay.
So I didn't even have anything, because I've heard, from what I've read, that this Battlefield Bad Company 2 is, it drops a lot of the things that made the first one good.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what they are because I haven't played it, but I don't know exact examples. But I just played it, and it's like, this could be called generic shooter number 43.
Well,
it's not horrible. It's pretty, but, you know, there's other things to do. I mean, I just can't, these days, you know, back in my younger years, back when I was a young man, you know, and games were relatively more expensive for you because you had less money, or at least I had less money.
Yeah.
I mean, I would play crappy games longer.
You didn't have any choice either, did you?
You felt like you kind of had to do it to recoup whatever investment you had in it, even if it was a bad, experience. But these days, I was like, oh, you know, I kind of wish I hadn't spent the money on this, but let's go play something else, because I'm not having a good time. My entertainment time is so limited these days that I just don't have time to play crap.
No. And I think back in the old days as well, you had much less opportunity to buy different games.
Right.
You didn't have digital distribution. You didn't have, you know, your local shops, you were limited to what stock they had.
Right.
You know, and I mean, it's not like games have re-releases of themselves very often. Yeah. Only the most successful games do. Yeah. So, you know, unless, you know, you pick up the big games like Doom and whatever, Doom 2 and Command & Conquer. But apart from that, you know, it was word of mouth, or you walked in the shop and picked it up.
Right, and that was always a walk in the shop. Until relatively recently, you know, it feels like a different world, but, you know, 5 years ago, I was always going to, you know, the local Best Buy or places like that, and going and looking at boxes and games that I hadn't heard of. You're always looking for something new and fun, and I was willing to give games more of a chance, I guess, than now. Because now it's like, if I usually don't buy on release anymore, and if I don't hear good things about the game, I won't pick it up, which I might be missing out on some things that I would like that a lot of people don't like. But I don't have time to invest in something that is not going to have some sort of payoff at some point.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No, I can completely agree with that, yeah.
Probably the last game that I bought that I think was not good was probably Spore. I didn't like Spore very much at all.
I think that was unfortunate as well, because The Promise was something amazing.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you ever played this game, probably not, because it was on the consoles, so I think it was on the NES, old SNES. And it was like a game where you evolved and you fought and you kind of, like Ghouls and Ghosts or Contra or something.
Right.
Not Contra, Throw Protector.
Okay.
I think that may have been Contra in America, I'm not sure. It was the graphics were changed around. So it was a side-scrolling thing. At the end of each level, you got points to upgrade your animal, and you gave yourself claws or whatever. And that affected how much speed you had or how much power you hit things with. And that's the kind of thing I thought Spore was going to be. And I didn't, when they unveiled the whole strategy element and the spacefaring thing, and I just thought, actually, you know what? I didn't predict this in any way, but it just looked like it was too complicated and there was going to be too much. And I think that's possibly what Spore suffered from, is just the lack of focus.
Well, the problem was it wasn't complicated, and there was too much, right? I mean, you get to, you know, you play the Civ, like, what, the Fourth Age or whatever, and it's like, I want more Civ and less goofy, cartoony garbage there, right? And you get to the space, I want more galactic civilizations and less goofy, cartoony nonsense, you know? It's just,
it's like an empty game, really, wasn't it?
It was very empty. And talk about soulless. To me, that's a soulless game. I mean, I think part of the reason why it was that way was because it was so open in how you design your creatures.
Yeah.
You couldn't really have any personality because you're just making Mr. Potato Head. Right? Just poking things onto a blob. And, you know, it's hard. If he could have pulled it off, if that could have been pulled off, it would have been a fantastic thing. But the thing is, they didn't pull it off, and it's interesting, but not a good game. And I mean this to be a tirade on Spore, is more of an example of, that's probably, you know, the last game where I didn't listen, you know, get some feedback on a game that I really regret spending money on. And like I say, I play you know, most games have some redeeming qualities to them in my mind. I mean, even if the UI is horrible, you know, the AI might be better. Because, you know, hell, I played Hearts of Iron 3, and that's got an unintelligible user interface, right? But the things that you do are interesting.
Yeah.
And you just have to get used to how they're presented to you. But, you know, so like I say, I just don't have time for bad games. Sorry.
I think these days, because things are so much more disposable, I think people are the same way in pretty much all types of media and entertainment. You know, if you don't enjoy a TV show, you stop watching it.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you have so much choice, right? I think that's one thing that choice gives you is bad stuff. You don't have to experience bad stuff. You can just go do something, you know. I could go watch TV, or I could go watch a movie, or I could go listen to some music, or I could go read a book.
Whereas in the past, we had four TV channels. Well, in the UK, we had four TV channels. And, you know, you watch that or you listen to radio, and you only had like five or six radio stations. So, you know, these days, kids are spoiled. That's the message, really, isn't it?
Well, they are spoiled. You know, they don't really realize just how things have changed and how much choice you really do have. I mean, there's so many ways to be entertained these days. I don't know if that's necessarily a good or a bad thing, but it is kind of how it is, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, at least we can be grumpy old men. We have a legitimate reason.
Absolutely. Well, that's kind of my wheelhouse. So grumpy style roll, baby.
Wait, get off my lawn.
Absolutely.
Okay, so thanks for listening, folks. I hope you've enjoyed our little detour from normal gaming regimen. At some point in the future, I'll be back playing games. I'm sure Taylor's been playing games all along, so we'll go back to our usual format of, you know, discussing news, playing games, discussing the games we've been playing, and also topics as well. I'll get some topics going, and we can change it up a little bit. But yeah, we hope you've enjoyed. I hope. I'm not sure what Taylor maybe. You know, he's secretly...
I'm grumpy. I hope nobody enjoyed it.
That's, yeah. And actually, there was one thing I wanted to talk about, but we haven't really got any time, so maybe next time, you know, in our reader submissions section. So yeah, if you do want to, you know, write in and tell us your top 10 games all time, just write into the.easiestbutton@gmail.com. And we've already got one submission from listener Clockwork House. And we'll go through them, you know, next time in our grab bag, I wanted to call it. What would you call that?
Mail poll,
okay. I don't know. Mail poll. So have a good night, and see you next time.
Good night, everybody. Have a good week. Woo.